and Jacob's experience will become something that informs, hopefully, our lives and our experience as we look at it together this morning. It happened a long time ago, but it's still fresh and real and speaks to us. Perhaps you remember, perhaps you can remember way, way back. Maybe you remember back with your own childhood or your children or your grandchildren. Maybe you have opened up a book of the Hans Christian Andersen tales, and you've read some of those, shared some of them. You know, actually, some of them are pretty scary these days. I'm not sure it's politically correct to go there on some of them. For sure, they're going to be getting a rewrite in some ways. But you know that actually, sometimes very ordinary places become gateways, connecting points that are become an interface between where the person is just now and suddenly realizing that something else is going on, or that there's another dimension, another point, a person who has been involved before that they haven't quite realized. So that's extended, I guess, picking up on that traditional idea, authors of fantasy books. There's got to be some people here who quite like reading fantasy books. I'm not the only one. Fantasy books, i.e. things like Harry Potter, Narnia, Lord of the Rings, they pick up on this kind of concept as well, and so portals, these connecting points, feature quite strongly in that kind of literature. A means of connecting where you are with another place, another dimension, another world even, perhaps. So you walk through a wardrobe and into, oh, just some place you couldn't even imagine. Or you step into a puddle and you don't find the bottom of the puddle, you just disappear into another world there, somewhere that you've never even realized. Or you step into a fireplace and you're transported to another part of the world that wouldn't seem at all possible. So, yes, I want you to note that portals, these gateways, these connecting points between the world as we know it and another place, another world, get your head around that, that they are often in the most ordinary places. And that's actually what kind of makes it work, is because they can be stumbled upon, found, and function in those kind of ways. And in our Bible story today, Jacob seems to stumble across one of these portals, these connecting places. He just so happens to camp for the night in a place that connects him to another world, in a place that connects him to something he hadn't quite grasped before, a whole new way of seeing the world and his life. But, and here's where I want you to hang in with me on this one, because actually there's more going on here than even he realizes. And I think that's where is a blessing for you and me. So let's just wind back a bit. I don't know how familiar you are with the Jacob story, but his life at this point is in crisis. His life is falling apart, and it's falling apart due to family breakdown and a deadly fallout with his minutes older brother. He has a twin, you see, and brother Esau is just minutes older than him, but that gives him birthright, and then there's been a tussle between these boys over this birthright, even though it's just a couple of minutes apart in their births. And so Jacob has big time now. He's kind of fooled and deceived his older brother into giving him this birthright. I mean, you say older brother, it's just a moment or two older than him. But Esau now is angry. The brothers are quite different people. Esau's a man of action. Jacob's a man of words. And the only way out of harm's way, it seems, is to make a run for it. The only place to run to is Uncle Laban's place, which is hundreds of miles away. That's his mother's brother, his uncle, back in Haran. And it's a couple of hundred miles across, you know, a pretty difficult countryside to navigate. So he leaves in a hurry with just what he can carry. And 45 miles, I looked at a map to try and figure this out. It's around about 45, 50 miles into the journey. So I'm guessing maybe he must have done this in a couple of days, or maybe he was just needing to run for it so much he actually covered 45 miles in a day. But as night falls, he finds himself in the country, near to the town of Luz, and with nowhere to spend the night, he sets up camp just where he can. He hasn't really made provision into his journey, and so he takes one of the rocks there. I'm guessing it must have been a little smoother than the others, and a little longer, and maybe a bit rounder. And he takes one of these rocks and sets it as his pillow. So far, kind of, isn't it? So ordinary. Not just, just a random piece of countryside. Nowhere special. And he's going to move on at first sight. He's not even going to remember this place. There's going to be nothing to signify the specialness of this place to stay ahead. He needs to move fast to stay ahead of his angry brother. But as he sleeps, he dreams. And in his dream, it opens up a completely different world to the one he's closed his eyes on. He's in the same place. But now he sees a stairway to heaven. Yes, even Led Zeppelin got the best ideas from the Bible, right? The bottom is resting on the earth right here beside him. And the top reaches up to heavens, and there's these beings, angels he makes out, walking downwards and upwards. There seems to be a lot of business going on between earth and heaven, and there's a lot of interaction coming up and down this busy, busy thoroughfare. And at the top, way off in the heavens, stood the Lord. You know how in dreams, it's almost like a movie, isn't it? That you pan in, you pan out, you focus up, you focus in, you pull away, and you've moved from one side of the scene to the other side of the scene. And Jacob's dream seems to qualify very much on that. So suddenly, he zooms in on this figure at the very top, the Lord, Yahweh, the God who had spoken to his forefathers, Abraham, and to his father Isaac. And then in his dream, this is the kind of weird thing that happens in dreams, isn't it? He suddenly becomes the subject of his dream. So yes, all very well, stairway to heaven, angels, God up there, but suddenly God starts speaking to him, to Jacob. And God directly addresses him. And through what God says to him, Jacob finds out that God has a relationship with him. I am the God, says God, of Abraham, your grandfather, and of Isaac, your father. I am the God who appeared to them. You've heard all about me. Now meet me for the first time. I have a relationship with you. I have been watching over you. I am part of your life. So that's the first thing that Jacob finds out. God has a relationship with him. And then secondly, that God has plans for him and for his descendants. Your descendants, says God, will be like the dust of the earth. You're going to spread out to the east and the west and to the north and the south, and all people on earth will be blessed through you and your offspring. Now that's a promise that God had made to his grandfather Abraham and now was making again to him. Wow. This is all a lot to take in when you're running away for your very life from your brother. But then God then gives him a third point, and that is that God will be with him through not just this journey, but through all of his life's journey. You know, I am with you, says God, and I will watch over you wherever you go, and I will bring you back to this land. I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you. Well, considering the promises of God, they're going to be forever promises. So God is saying, I am never leaving you. So when Jacob awoke from his vivid dream, it's no surprise that he comes to and just is like kind of a little bit gobsmacked by what has gone on. Surely, says God, was in this place, and I wasn't aware of it. How awesome is this place? This is no other than the house of God. In Hebrew, that is Beit El, which gives us, of course, the name Bethel. Beit El. This is the Beit El. This is the house of God. This is the gate of heaven. I mean, there's a stairway right there. I can't see it now, but there's a stairway right there that goes between earth and heaven. He's amazed at the ordinariness of the place, the lack of ceremony, the lack of procedure at being ushered into the very presence of God. And here on this hillside, in this random place, as he wakens in the morning, perhaps, maybe it wasn't morning, maybe he had to wait for that, but he wakens on that hillside, and there's just the vegetation and the rocks and the sky, and everything is just exactly what it was when he got there the night before. But everything has kind of changed for him. This is an amazing place now. I want you to notice that God meets Jacob in a very ordinary place. Just the kind of place that we might go, we might be in. God doesn't meet Jacob in a temple. He doesn't meet him after priestly sacrifices and incantations. He doesn't meet him when he's had a decent chance to have a wash and a shave and a put on a clean clothes and prepare himself to go and meet with God and do all the things that he might have wanted to do before he saw God. No, God, he suddenly just, bang, he's there in the presence of God. It just happened. He meets him camping on a hillside with his head laid on a stone pillow. And I want you to think about this, because it is so also true with us, that God meets us exactly where we are, in the ordinary places of our lives, in the office, in the kitchen, behind the wheel of your car, at school, at the doctor's, at the gym, in the pool. God can be with us and meet with us wherever we are. Wow. Just like Jacob, in all these places, like him, we can suddenly find that we are in a place of divine connection. That God's just like there, not there, he's there, really, really close by. So maybe some of the times we call it, you know, it's when we are aware of a place like that or a experience like that, we say, we're in a thin place, a place where the layer doesn't seem to be very thick between where we are and where God is. And with that connection, with that presence of God here with Jacob and in our lives as well in the ordinary places, God transforms ordinary places into holy places. Jacob acknowledges that transformation when he says, surely the Lord is in this place. Like, I wasn't aware of it. I need to do something special here. I need to acknowledge this as the house of God. I need to acknowledge this as the gate of heaven. God is right here. There are angels descending and ascending. He's seen that. The ordinary becomes the sacred. It becomes holy. And again, this story can inform our own experience, I think. God meets us in ordinary places, and he speaks into those spaces if we will only listen. Sometimes, like Jacob, God has to wait for us to stop running, to stop doing, to stop being. He has to wait for us to stop. Jacob needed to be asleep before God could intervene, before God could get his attention. And sometimes that's the same in our lives. We need to stop in order to hear God's voice. But God speaks into those spaces and he acts in them and he makes plans and promises in that space. And God is holy, and there is nothing that isn't good in God. And so everywhere that God is goodness. Everywhere that God is unbelievable power and strength. And we call all of that gathered together as holiness. So wherever God is also has this kind of crackly kind of energy that is this sense of holy. So as God meets us in the ordinary places, the everyday, those spaces are transformed. They become holy ground, just like this place did become holy ground for Jacob. You know, think about this. Remember, God meets Moses by a burning bush. Whoosh! Suddenly it's the presence of God. God meets Gideon on a threshing floor. The disciples become aware of the power of Jesus in a boat in the middle of a storm. God meets us in ordinary places. David is met by God as he tends his sheep. The same applies, I think it really, really does to you and to me. God meets us in these incredibly ordinary places, in our workplace, our home, our walking, our time of just taking time out with other people. God meets us in those places and he transforms the ordinary into an extraordinary, into a holy place. If God is in your ordinary, it definitely becomes extraordinary. And that opens up all kinds of possibilities. Jacob, until this time, had been running through fear. Now, he realizes he doesn't have to be afraid. God is with him. God has made promises to protect him and to keep him. So the ordinary becomes the extraordinary because God is present. That opens up lots of possibilities. So remember that. Remember that this week as you go to work, as you do things around the home, as you minister to people as family and friends around and about you. To mark his awareness of this moment, Jacob takes the stone that he has laid on through the night and he sets it upright as a makeshift altar and pours oil over it as an offering of worship. As he worships, he makes his own promise to God. He vows to make this God his God, and this place he vows to make a house of God. And he also promises to share his resources, 10%, a tenth of all that you give me. He signifies that because he says that in verse 22, this stone that I have set up a pillar will be God's house, and of all that you give me, I will give you a tenth. So he's acknowledging God's going to give him everything that he has is going to belong to God, but by giving back a proportion of it, he keeps that focus in his mind. Maybe we need to remember that in terms of our own commitment to generosity and giving. That God, everything that we have belongs to God. Everything that we have comes from God. But we choose to give back a proportion of it as a reminder to our own selves that actually everything belongs to him. He graciously allows us to use it and to keep it. But everything belongs to him, and we signify that by giving something back to him, a proportion of it, that can then be used in worship and glory to God. And I think that here is an important point that we just need to grasp in Jacob's actions here. He sets up a marker, though, in an ordinary place, something to remind him of God's presence and his and the relationship and the commitments that he's made. And God is present in our ordinary places, and his presence makes those places holy. So it can be helpful to mark the encounter, to remind yourself that surely God is in this place, at your desk, in your car, in your home, wherever you are. that his help can be counted on in times of stress and of testing, but also every single day. But you know, I don't think that Jacob really understood this encounter properly. You think, well, why did you say that, Andy? Well, I don't think he really understood, because Jacob's every reaction is to say, oh, it's about the place. I happen to sleep on a mountainside in a place that connects heaven to earth. So I want to remember this place. I'm going to set up this stone so I remember exactly the point, because I need to come back to exactly here, because that's where the stairway comes. The stairway comes down here and it lands right here. And I want to be sure of finding this again. It's kind of like the pot of gold, isn't it? Underneath the, you know, waterfall or at the end of a rainbow or whatever. He wants to find this place again. He's like, no, I need to get back here one day. And he goes off. And it takes him, I think, really a couple of decades later when he returned home and spent the night wrestling with a mysterious stranger by the Jabbok River to understand what really he should have learned that night on the hillside at Bethel. The mysterious person who wrestled with him those decades later turned out to be God in human form, and he left Jacob with both a blessing and a limp. And what did it take until then for Jacob to learn? Well, it was here in Bethel he thought he'd found this portal, this incredible connection point, this gateway to the unseen. But no, in the coming decades and finally in that wrestling match, Jacob learned that it wasn't the place that was the portal. It wasn't the place that was the portal. It was him. It was him. He was the bottom of the gateway, of the ladder from heaven. He was the bottom of that stairway into the heavens. God was with him. God was present in his life. Wherever he went, God went with him. God was present wherever he was. So actually, wherever he walked was hallowed ground. It was a place of God's holiness and could be marked as such. God was never absent except in his own awareness and his own understanding. You know, years later, and here's where it lands the point for you and for me today. Years later, the Apostle Paul restated this truth to the early Christians. First to the Corinthians, where he says this in 1 Corinthians chapter 3 and verse 16. Don't you know that you yourselves are God's dwelling and that God's Spirit lives in you? And then in Ephesians, he restates this truth again in chapter 2 and verse 22. And in him, you too are being built together to become a dwelling in which God lives by his Spirit. You, my friends, you who know Jesus are the portals. You're this place. You're the connecting point between heaven and earth. It used to be temples. It used to be special places. It used to be places that stood on ceremony. Only there was always these connecting points, as Jacob shows us, that God was active and living in. And now God chooses to make his presence in the world known through you, through wherever you go, through his promises and plans for you. And I want you just to hold on to that. And we're going to watch just now a little video just to sum things up this morning. Thank you, Graham. coming week, surely the Lord was in this place, wherever you are, because God is with you. Don't you know that you yourselves are God's dwelling and that His Spirit dwells in you? I'm going to be handing out as we finish our final, in a moment, Sandra's going to come up and lead us as we close the service out. And in that time, I'm going to hand out to you a little card to take away with you. It says on the front, presence, pressure, and purpose. And on the back, it's got space to just think about how do you experience God's presence with you in your frontline space? What pressure point is there in that space? And what might be God's purpose for you there right now? And just reflecting on Jacob's experience and that understanding that God is with you wherever you are. You might want to take this, do it with a friend, or work through it on your own at some point this week, just to remind yourself that God is with you because you are the connecting point, the portal between heaven and earth, the way in which God reveals His love, His light, and His goodness to the world around. Thank you, Sandra.